All right, Joe. Well, thanks so much for coming back, and welcome to the Hi-Fi History bonus round.
Okay, Clint. Thanks a lot for having me back.
Could you maybe tell us a little bit about another project that you've worked on that you used 3D technology for?
Sure. That'd be great. A number of years ago, a lighting company came to me with a project for the Abel Smith Schoolhouse. That was one of the first segregated African schoolhouses in the United States, and it was located in Boston, Massachusetts. The significance of that particular facility was it was the start of the equal education battle. This was in the 1830s, nearly 100 years before the Brown versus the Board of Education segregation battles began. So it's managed by the National Park Service, and it's a stop on the Boston Black Heritage Trail. So the project that I was presented with, I deal specifically with details within the project as opposed to the larger project, but they had gas fixtures in the original schoolhouse, and part of the renovation, restoration of the schoolhouse was to shift those gas fixtures over to electrical lighting fixtures, but still having some respect for the original design of the fixtures. The lighting manufacturer showed up at my door one day with a box of chunks of metal, and it was kind of a fun project in relating to 3D scanning, because we knew what these things were supposed to look like at the end of the day, but all we had were bits and pieces. And what I was able to do digitally was scan every one of those chunks of metal and reassemble them on a computer screen digitally to get them put back together like a jigsaw puzzle. From there, we used CNC milling technology to, again, cut the foundry pattern and successfully replicate or reproduce those fixtures with accommodation, not for flowing gas, but for electrical wires. So I really enjoyed it. And I think that was one of my first restoration projects working with a significant historical site.
And doing that process, were those pieces, were they all there, or were there some gaps where you had to fill it in?
There were a lot of gaps. There wasn't much there. They were probably 30 or 40% there over the course of maybe 6 or 7 scraps of metal. The lighting manufacturer had a good historical eye. And worked pretty close with me to piece all these parts back together. He had a good sense of what they were supposed to be because he'd been studying the project quite a bit. For example, we had a very, very small, it was like the equivalent of a color match paint chip where you remove 15 layers of wallpaper and 4 layers of paint to finally find that quarter inch fleck of paint to tell you what color it was originally. We did that 3-dimensionally to figure out things like background textures on the gaslight fixtures.
Wow.
So by no means were they complete.
Yeah, that's great. So how did you fill that in then? You just...
Once we were able to find that little fleck of paint, I was able to reproduce it in the computer and just repopulate it across the entire area that required that particular texture. Again, taking advantage, much as the simplicity of resizing a piece or mirroring a piece in a computer, populating a texture once you have a piece of it is fairly simple.
And to pivot a little bit, I was wondering if you could tell us if you have a specific dream project or something you'd like to work on using 3D technology, or just a type of area maybe that you'd want to do more work in or get into?
I seem to get passionate on these historical reproduction projects. I get hit with a lot of projects coming anywhere from, I've done cosmetic prosthetics, I've done dental display work, I've done a lot of jewelry work, I've done sports trophies, but what seems to stir my passion is these historic projects. And I think that's a lot because I just want to learn how things were done by my ancestors. There were some awfully fine craftsmen, a lot of really brilliant thinking. I'm involved right now in a restoration project here in my hometown, helping to renovate or restore and save a silversmith's house from the early 1800s. And as part of that, I've had the great pleasure of being able to examine some of his silver pieces, museum-level silver pieces. And I'm always fascinated when I can actually get in there and study them and see how he did things. And a lot of it was driven by the fact that he had limited tools. But it's a learning situation. I want to learn from these pieces. So I think the dream project, you know, if I could chart my course on the type of work I really, really like to do, it's exactly what I did for Texas State House. It's exactly the contributions I'm making on the Silversmith's House. It's a treat for me to be able to examine these pieces and see how things were done and just see how brilliant the people were that did them.
Because for you, it's a real personal connection as a silversmith yourself. You like to see how your forebears did things, and that kind of speaks to you.
It does, exactly. I grew up in southwestern Pennsylvania in a historical little town up in the Allegheny Mountains, the site of the Whiskey Rebellion. And history was always really important in that town. And it's just, I think it's a common understanding that we're losing sight of our history. We don't understand where we've been, and we need to understand that to figure out where we're going. And I think we can learn a lot more if we can see and if we can understand. Professionally, I look at things and say, oh, well, that's just such a simple solution to a problem that I've been up for three nights trying to figure out. And me sitting here with all these resources, with all this computer technology and the mills and the 3D printers, but yet they were able to do these things with some very simplistic tools and a lot of brain power. So it's just, yes, it's a professional satisfaction, and it, you know, I love doing it. It's a passion.
And one last question, to go back to the 3D technology side of things, what about this technology in particular excites you the most?
I think the neatest thing about it is that everybody can make things. It's not, you don't have to go to a jeweler to make a ring and then take that ring to somebody else to do the next process. Manufacturing is now in your hands, and it's in my hands. It's in the hands of my 15-year-old son. These maker labs and fab labs that are being put into small towns are freeing. You don't have to be an engineer. You don't have to invest $4 million in a tool-up. You can get things done. You know, it gets back to Jay Leno building his gas tank. He's building what he needs. These fab labs, there. I had a chance to go to a lecture by a guy named Neil Gershenfeld. He runs the MIT Center of Bits and Atoms. And what they're doing in that project is he's putting fab labs in developing countries so people can simply build what they need. And if that's a water pump system or, you know, an antenna tower, he's putting the technology in their hands to do it. So you can do it and I can do it. And what it does is it breaks down boundaries. So it lets us all think out of the box. I think it's going to lead to a great amount of invention and ingenuity. It's bringing the stuff that we couldn't have 20 years ago.